This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanasan. It's 7:07 a.m. Thursday, the 2nd of July. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Alex Tan, forensics and risk leader at PwC Malaysia, on the appointment of the new independent MACC members. But before that, we're taking a look at the markets.
Yes, my favourite thing. Nikkei, the Japan was down 0.75%. The Kospi was just under 0.07% there. Hong Kong was up 0.5%. Shanghai closed... jumped about 1.4%, actually. The STI Singapore was up 0.8%, and FBM KLCI Malaysia closed up 0.9% yesterday at the close. So good day for this part of the world, for the most part anyway. Over in the US, the Dow closed down 0.3%. This was pulled down by Exxon and Walgreens. However, the S&P 500 was up 0.5%, and the NASDAQ rose 0.95% to hit another record. It's broken its record from a few months back before all this kind of kicked off. This was on the back of vaccine hopes, really.
All right. And so to give us more insight into global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, Vishnu.
Good morning.
Now, U.S. June consumer confidence surprised on the upside, and the equity rally seems intact for now. Is this purely irrational exuberance from investors, or are there strong fundamentals justifying this optimism?
I mean, that's a good question. And to be very honest, you know, we continue to struggle. On one hand, we must concede that U.S. economic data have surprised the upside more often than not, and quite significantly when they do so. Even U.S. ISM manufacturing came in rather strong overnight. So all of this lend to the story of a robust U.S. recovery. My reservation is that we are hanging too much on single data points or very few data points and under accounting for the uncertainty ahead. And one thing for sure is it seems equity market rallies are not just acknowledging the data suppressed. They've gotten well ahead, projecting this like a straight line. But, you know, at the end of the day, when we look at it, it's all about liquidity, I think. You know, it's just the sheer amount of or the deluge of, you know, central bank liquidity is driving markets much higher. And sometimes we fear too far ahead of fundamentals.
Yeah, there's so much money out there in the world right now, Vishnu, and everyone's just looking for a place to put that money to work. Now, on the flip side, though, you know, we're talking about data points. The IMF has warned that Asia's GDP growth will shrink by 1.6% for the first time in history due to the contagion effect of COVID-19. Do you share this pessimistic view, or at least the scale of it?
Speaking of pessimism, Roshan, let me start with a slight correction earlier. There is a lot of money out there, but not all of us are looking for places to put our excess money. Some of us are just watching others do it. On that note, and getting slightly more pessimistic, I think the IMF is very justified in saying what they're saying. And I think what they're looking at are two factors. One is they're saying, look, the road ahead is still very uncertain. And, you know, the byproduct of opening up global commerce again, which is supposed to be good for Asia, is that a second wave risk comes along with it. And Asia, EM Asia in particular, remains very vulnerable via trade channels. And also the fact that many of EM Asia are dependent on external financial flows, which can remain very volatile in this climate with a very quick you know, light-footed return back to where they came from. So these are the vulnerabilities they're looking at. If we take a step back and we think about, you know, GDP in Asia as the total income growth, and we cannot convince ourselves that total wages, total profits, total rent and total interest income will be higher this year than last year, then what the IMF says seems to be right, that, you know, it does look like it's going to contract.
And while manufacturing data across Asia has improved, sentiment in Japan remains muted, as shown by the Poor Tankan survey results. So is Japan the sick man of Asia? Does Shinzo Abe need to increase the amount of fiscal stimulus?
That's a very interesting question, Shaoning, because I think one of the things about this is we're considering whether you know, Japan is lagging because of some of the vulnerabilities, or it's purely Japan is more grounded about these things. On fiscal stimulus, I think they can't go a lot bigger than they already are. It's an exceptional size of fiscal stimulus. And it relates only two questions. One is how much of that can effectively hit the ground and you know, buy time until we naturally extricate ourselves out of this crisis. That's one. And the other is, how far can you push this before it becomes a mounting debt issue with very little traction on economic growth? So I think pushing the fiscal lever further, if that's even possible, is perhaps not the answer.
Right, Vishnu. And then this is, I just want to round this off by taking a look at oil. It's been steadily rising and U.S. stockpiles are shrinking. But, you know, the demand is still a big question up in the air, right? Especially now as there's some concerns over whether the states will go back into a lockdown and whether we'll see demand curb there again. Where do you see oil prices heading overall? Can Brent go further than the $41 per barrel that we're looking at this morning?
Well, you know, as useless economic forecasts go, our own forecast is for oil to gradually recover somewhere in the $45 to $55 range as we progress further out of this crisis. And for now, we think, you know, $35 to $45 seems to be about where it ought to be. So we're talking about a very slight recovery. What's probably going to happen in the U.S., I think, is necessarily going to lead to some kind of consolidation because of the crunch that's come about. How much of that can be kicked down the road because of the government cash injection? I think that's one question. And overall, I think the U.S. is still betting on one fact, which is even if with the second wave, it's still a high bar for another lockdown. So they're looking for some bumps along the way, but not a sudden seizure in the pickup or in the gradual recovery in activity. And one can only keep their fingers crossed about this. But either way, it's not going to be a huge amount of upside for oil as supply has built up in anticipation of demand. And so the demand reaction is going to be somewhat more muted.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Vishnu. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. So he was talking a little bit there about his expectations for oil and what the U.S. is going to do about it. But if we take a look at the U.S. as well, that we have seen some earnings results coming out of Macy's, which recorded a $3.1 billion worth of asset impairment charges in their first quarter earnings ended May 2nd as the pandemic ravaged the retail industry. Now, this is despite sales having started to show some signs of recovery. So they were particularly affected during the quarter by store closures, including at its flagship store in Manhattan's Herald Square.
Yes, and that particular store relies heavily on international tourists. And our revenue declined to just above $3 billion from $5.5 billion a year ago. Now, that's a big fall there. It also reported a net loss of $3.6 billion from a net income of $136 million a year ago. And net sales were $3 billion, a 45% plunge from the same period last year. Overall, not great numbers there. Lots of falling numbers, but then again, with the extent of the demand disruption that we saw, I don't think this was too much of a surprise. I guess it's just about the quantum of the fall that's the question.
But in contrast, some automakers were not doing too badly, considering the fact that General Motors and Fiat Chrysler heaped praise on U.S. consumers after their quarterly sales held up better than analysts expected and left dealerships with a rather slim vehicle inventory. Deliveries dropped 34% for GM and 39% for Fiat Chrysler, both better than projected. Although Toyota just narrowly missed estimates, its decline tempered towards the end of the quarter, and they saw June sales falling 27%.
Yeah. I think I saw a headline earlier on BBC about how Tesla has become more valuable than Toyota. And Toyota, I think Toyota is the biggest car maker in the world, or it could be Volkswagen, either one of those companies there, in terms of just all their subsidiaries producing cars. This is interesting because overall, the car industry has had tough times, right? Mm-hmm. We've talked about how they are struggling to make sales. It's expensive. Going towards the future, which is EV, is an expensive pivot to make. But this is really all just relative, right? Because at the end of the day, deliveries dropped 34% for GM and 39% for Fiat Chrysler. It still fell, but on a relative basis, it just seems a little better.
All right, and we're going to be heading into some messages now. And then up next, we're speaking with Daryl Ong, president of the Malaysian E-Hailing Drivers Association, on how the e-hailing drivers are doing in the wake of the COVID pandemic. So be sure to stay tuned for that after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.